everyone, and welcome to episode 557 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the small crew here this week. Krim woke up sick, he's on his way to the doctor's, but I'm joined by Richard, the owner of MTG Goldfish. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Cowabunga, Seth. Do you know Cowabunga?
Cowabunga, dude.
Do you know Cowabunga?
I do know that. I do know that much, Ninja Turtles. It's here. The rumors have been confirmed. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles coming to Magic. And that's one of our big topics today. We're going to be talking TMNT spoilers, kind of our first impressions of the set. And then we got a bunch of other news. There's some pricing news. We've seen some collector booster boxes prices really moving around. Eternal Weekend was this weekend. We got some ethics questions, some fish mail questions, maybe Mark Rosewarner and his blog talk. So we're going to talk Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and a bunch of other stuff. Before we do, we got a couple of sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use our curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use a sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment once your order is processed, and you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show is also brought to you by Heavy Play, advanced gaming equipment. Curved sleeves feature rounded corners on the bottom for improved comfort in shuffling. The sleeves are fully opaque, so you don't have to worry about double-faced cards, and the front interior is always black. They're available in a wide array of colors, and you can head over to heavyplay.com/mtggoldfish or use the code MTGGoldfish at checkout to save 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic, and let's start with the big news, which is the rumors have been going around of a Nickelodeon set. We had kind of narrowed it down to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Wizards confirmed at New York Comic Con, TMNT is coming to Magic. Richard, are you a Turtles fan? What do you think? Just what's your first impression of this now that it's confirmed? Is that a show that you remember like watching growing up? Is there any nostalgia here?
All right. I'm a 90s kid. Everyone loved Turtles. Okay. Like Turtles is up there, like Power Rangers, Turtles, maybe Dragon Ball. But yep. Like Turtles, like all my toys were Ninja Turtles. You know, I played all the Ninja Turtle games, Halloween costume. I was a turtle. I had a pet turtle, like many kids. And like many kids,
yeah,
I killed a turtle. Like it was a big thing, right? Because of Ninja Turtles, everyone got turtles as pets. And, you know, they're not easy to take care of, no. Right? So no. I was the biggest Turtles fan you can imagine. And this set kind of does nothing for me. I'm kind of
really?
Dead inside. I don't know what it is. I don't know if the internet hate has finally gotten to me. But I'm just like, it's fine. Like, I don't know, right? Because I should be the target demographic for this. But I don't know. I don't know what it is. Because Turtles is still ongoing. Like, they've rebooted, like, several generations worth. And kids today still watch Turtles. There was a recent Turtles movie, which was actually pretty decent. I watched that. But I don't know. I kind of think of it as, like, a kid's show or something. And, like, I'm feeling nothing about this, as opposed to Spider-Man. I love Spider-Man. Even though everyone else hated Spider-Man, I'm like, yeah, Spider-Man. This is kind of like, I don't know, man.
Interesting. I expected you to like this one, honestly. Like, I know the Turtles a little bit. I had the weird, like, upbringing without TV and stuff. So all these things everyone loves so much from being a 90s kid, I'm like, I didn't really get to watch that when I was a kid. But I knew the Turtles because they were everywhere when I was growing up. I don't have any, like, big special connection to them. So I was kind of, like, in the middle. I will say my first impression was a little bit of relief. It's like coming off of Spider-Man, I was really worried that this was going to be like super cringy. And I think like some of the cards are kind of cringy, but then some of the cards we got like ninjas and they have swords and it like seems a little bit Magic adjacent. I don't know. Like I felt like it fit in Magic. Some of the cards at least fit better than I was worried that they would. But do you think that's true? Like how adjacent to Magic do you think this is now that we've seen some of the art?
You know, this weekend I wanted to go, touch grass, go into nature. So, I went hiking at my local pizzeria and got a slice of pizza that represents forests.
What?
What?
<Kim's laughs> land?
The pizza lands are horrendous. What do you mean they're not cringe? I'm like, oh, my God. Okay. I'm like, what happened here? It's like, It's like we gave magic design to Nickelodeon itself. You know, Wizards was like, yo, we don't have resources to design anything. Would you, Nickelodeon intern, like to make magic cards? They're like, yeah, we could do it. How about we make pizza and we'll make the pepperoni a mountain symbol? Yeah.
You didn't want a broccoli green mana symbol, Richard? You've not been waiting for that? Honestly, I know they're cringe. They are probably the cringiest part of the entire set. But there is a tiny part of me that's happy for them just because I'm building that, like, Graham O'Brien guy in his garage eating food deck that's going to be, like, my commander deck. And these are kind of the perfect lands for that deck. So, I mean, there is some upside here, as cringy as they are. I mean, I guess the point of that deck is kind of to be cringy. So I guess it fits there. What about the rest of the cards, though? So the lands, like, look them up. They are like nothing we've ever seen before on a land in Magic. But what about the rest of the cards? Like, Super Shredder, Richard. Look at Super Shredder. I could see that being, like, a Kamigawa card, right? Couldn't you kind of, like, squint hard enough and you see, like, a ninja rat and it's, like, kind of looks a little magic-y to me? Even some of the turtles are, like, yeah, it's weird, I guess, that it's a turtle that's dressed up like a samurai, but still, like, I could see that being a weird magic card. Like, some of them look kind of close, right?
Yeah, they do, but I don't. So Shredder totally fits in universe, and like the rat ninja thing, like, clearly Wizards took inspiration from turtles at some point. And even things like the weapons, you know, like Raph is using a Jitei for some reason. So, you know, Umezawa's Jitei, everyone's like up in arms about that, because, like, doesn't he use size? And I have no idea what the lore is, but the Reddit comments seem to indicate that the turtles were not so tied down to their weapons as in the early times, where, like, every, you know, Donatello always had the staff, Leonardo had the dual swords or whatever. Apparently, they just grab ninja weapons now, and Raph uses Jiteis half the time. And my only understanding is Asai has, like, three pointy things, and a Jitei has two. That is the extent of my ancient weapons knowledge, but I don't know. I mean, it's fine, but then you see things like Turtles Forever, and that takes you out of universe, right? So Turtles Forever is actually kind of cool. So one of the questions I had coming into the set is, which art style do they use? Because there's, like, the original 90s art. That's not even the original. There's the original cartoon. The original comic book, which is, like, a dark, gritty comic book, and then they adapted it for the 90s cartoon series. And then over time, they have changed it to some that I don't like some of the newer Nickelodeon CGI looking things I didn't like. Nah. But Turtles Forever shows four different turtles, the four main turtles, but in different art styles. And the cards are a mixture of the various art styles and designs over time. So I kind of like that, but then at the same time, it just kind of takes you out of universe, right? Like, it's so contrasting. It doesn't look like a single individual world.
Yeah.
And then it's also Return to New York City, which is our, I guess, our blocks, second set.
Blocks are back, Richard. Blocks are back. We're going to New York City block this year.
Right. And New York City has a problem in which there's, like, no actual nature. So we have Pizza Lands, which isn't even true. Right? Not Golden Gate Park. What's it? What's that park?
I can't think of it either. It's very
about.
Central Park.
Yeah, of course I've been to New York and I've forgotten about that. But, you know. These cards are okay. The other weird thing that immediately people pointed out is the multiple versions of turtles. So we already have three Leonardos, I think. We have two from the commander set, one from the main set, and you're supposed to get a turtle in every pack. There's only, like, four turtles.
There's only four
right?
of them,
like,
right? Yeah.
Maybe, like, five or six, depending on, like, what you count, you know? But, like, we're going to get a lot of duplicates. And Spider-Man, people complained about having too many Spider-Men, but, like, they were all actually different, right? Like, Spider-Man is actually different from Scarlet Spider, which is different from Peter Parker Spider-Man, right? But, like, this is the same Leonardo, right? Like, with random titles that I don't know have appeared anywhere. Like, if I'm like, who's the Sewer Samurai, Seth? Would you be like, yeah, that's Leonardo? Like, I'm not even sure. I'm not a big enough Turtles fan to know. But there's a lot of, like, duplicate turtles. And then there's also, like, combined cards. So we have Donnie and April, a dorkable duel. We have Heroes in a Half Shell, which is a 5C Turtles commander.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow, Seth. You know Turtle Power
as
well?
I knew that. Yeah.
Wow.
See, I've been watching Pop Culture Jeopardy so I can learn this stuff. They put it on Netflix and I'm catching up with all y'all. What do you think about the response to this, Richard? So I would say the response to me, and I don't know how much of this is just Spider-Man carrying over and how disliked that set was, but for some reason, last week or two, it's almost felt like the dam has broken, and I've just seen so much criticism of Universes Beyond, of Turtles. Like, is it the four Universes Beyond sets next year? Is it Spider-Man was so bad, people are just like, it's tainted the whole thing? What do you think of this, like, just super negative response? Like, is something different now, or is this just the internet complaining this week, and a week from now we're going to be on to Avatar and everyone's going to forget about all this?
I think it feels like they sold out, which is, like, you know, people have been claiming this for a while, right? But, like, when you look at Spider-Man and all the, like, alternate borders and treatments, you're like, they kind of cared, right? They, you know, whoever designed this, like, loves Spider-Man, and they understand the appeal and, like, the comic book frames and, like, the comic book covers and the sagas. Like, all those are really cool. And then you're like, okay, maybe the card design is a little sus, right? Maybe pick two draft sucks, right? But you're like, I can see, like, kind of what they were trying to do. Turtles, I'm like, I don't really know what's going on here. It feels like they just slapped some cards together. And I don't know. It could be that the hate has finally caught up and we've succumbed to it. And it could be just the same. I think the difference will be gameplay. This was, like, fully designed to be an in-universe set, theoretically. So the drafting aspect shouldn't be, like, cobbled together. So hopefully we have, like, a real draft and it's, like, Final Fantasy levels. And then all will be forgiven because the gameplay is great. But so far, the design and the mechanics are kind of like, I don't like them.
I kind of like, well, it's kind of fun. Mechanic-wise, I kind of like the mechanic because the one we've seen so far is Sneak. And it's basically baby's first ninjutsu. I think it's like ninjutsu but simplified without some of the weird, like, fringe tricks you could do in ninjutsu. And I always thought ninjutsu is a fun mechanic, so I do like ninjutsu coming back, although it's hilarious to me that we had, like, 30 years where only ninjutsu existed, and then in the last 6 months we've had two, like, pseudo ninjutsu mechanics, because we had the web slinging mechanic in Spider-Man and now we have the sneak mechanic from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles set. So they're really going back to that. As far as drafting, I believe our editor Niatuk pointed out, and I'm trying to find where he actually said this, but I believe he pointed out that this is also probably going to be a small set. If you go by when the, like, collector booster cards start, it's going to be, like, under 200 cards or something, similar to Spider-Man, which makes me worry that it might be another, like, pick two draft set where, you know, Wizards, they, when they get an idea and they go super hard on that idea, and then it takes them a while to change course if the idea doesn't work out. So we'll have to wait and see on that end if it actually is, like, a full set for draft, or if it's another kind of Spider-Man pick two. Yeah,
pick four turtles in your pack, you know, it's basically just sealed, which is actually better. I'd rather play sealed than, like, sealed is much better than pick two. Like, people think, like, because you're picking two, it's, like, between sealed and draft, but it's not, right? Because, like, your options are kind of limited because your colors get cut. But can we talk about sneak, Seth? I want to talk,
yeah,
I want to complain
about
sneak. Okay. So, obviously, Wizards spoiled a card with Sneak, and there was no reminder text on it. So, we will have to combine two cards at once. So, let's talk about Leonardo Sewer Samurai. 3 and a white to cast. 3/3 legendary creature, Mutant Ninja Turtle Samurai. The set symbol is the turtle face, by the way, and it's kind of just, like, kind of out there. Sneak, 2 and a white. We'll get to that in a second. Let me read the rest. This thing's a book. Double strike. During your turn, you may cast spells with power toughness 1 or less from your graveyard. If you cast a spell this way, that creature enters with a finality counter on it. And then sneak. So I'm going to read it off of Raphael's technique, which is an instant. You may cast this spell for its sneak cost if you also return an unblocked attacker you control to hand during declare blocker step. And I believe the official Wizards account confirmed that the creature is coming in tapped and attacking, similar to ninjutsu. So the difference is ninjutsu it's just return an unblocked creature. And you can do that anytime you feel like it. So you can do it after damage has been done in the post-combat phase. You can do it after first strike damage has been done to get, like, double strike at home. There's, like, weird timing things you can do with it. But otherwise, if you use ninjutsu the intuitive way, it's kind of the same thing, except now you can ninjutsu non-creatures, as evidenced in Raphael's technique. And it's called a new word. And that, Seth, rubs me the wrong way. Like, why do we need to keep fixing mechanics? Why did we not just fix ninjutsu as a whole and slap ninjutsu on this card so that we don't have these, like, super parasitic mechanics that kind of do the same thing, but not really? Like, if you don't want weird timing things confusing new players, fix ninjutsu, slap ninjutsu onto this card, and then now we have ninjutsu support in Turtles as opposed to sneak support, and then your ninjutsu deck is just wallowing, you know, in the past times.
And you know what in Magic actually uses ninjutsu? It's ninjas, like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, why did we have to create an entire new mechanic when it already is the ninja mechanic? I don't really understand the reason that we needed to have sneak be a mechanic either. Like, we just went to Kamigawa, what, 3 years ago? 4 years ago? I guess it's been a little while now, but fairly recently, and they brought back ninjutsu. It's not like it's banding from the early 90s and some mechanic that we're never going to see again. Why do you think they did this? Like, is sneak, you probably know Turtles slightly more than me. Is sneak, like, some important word in Turtles lore? Nah. I didn't think it
was. They would do ninjutsu. Like,
I don't know why they had to do this. And I think, like, the changes to it makes it a little bit simpler. But ninjutsu is still pretty intuitive. Like, yeah, maybe it takes you a while to, like, get the trick of doing it after damage is dealt or whatever, but you're still going to play it pretty correctly. Like, yeah, you might not get all the tricks. And I think there's an upside to that. Like, you don't need to dumb down every mechanic for new players. I think there is part of your Magic journey is, like, learning those tricks, and you start off playing ninjutsu the simple way, right? And then one day you're like, oh my god, there's actually a window where I can do this at the end of combat after I dealt damage, and you feel like you leveled up and you feel like you're, like, getting better at the game. And I think those moments are actually, like, important. I think those are moments that, like, get people hooked on the game and keep them coming back to the game. And those little tricks are just not going to happen with the wording on sneak. So maybe this is, like, a little fringe thing, but I also don't see why we needed to have sneak instead of ninjutsu. What do you think of the card?
I was going to say, my guess is they want to remove the flavor from it. So, like, Obviously Turtles, ninjutsu makes sense, but what if they wanted to put ninjutsu onto Spider-Man? Right? Or they wanted your thief to do ninjutsu or whatever, right? Then you're like, eh, what is this? So we'll just use sneak. Everyone can use sneak. But then it kind of removes the point of the plane and, like, the original card itself. You know what I mean? Like, if you just remove all of the flavorful aspects and put in generic verbs, this is, like, kind of useless. So I don't like it, but I'm pretty sure it's because they want, I don't know, someone from Star Trek to use sneak instead of ninjutsu. Yeah. Like, that guy probably doesn't know ninjutsu. Like, what's he doing?
I guess that could make sense. Maybe sneak is the new, like, evergreen keyword for ninjutsu like abilities. Like, I guess that would be a possibility. Yeah, it just seems unnecessary to me. What do you think of this card though? Like, Leonardo's got to be pretty strong, right? Being able to cast all your low power toughness creatures from your graveyard, even with finality counters, is good. If you sneak it, you get in for 6 thanks to double strike, and your creature's already unblocked and is tapped in attacking. Like, it seems like good top end to some sort of aggro deck, right?
What are we talking? Are we talking about standard? We're talking about commander.
Yeah, well, it's standard. Let's 60 card formats. Standard, yeah.
It's probably not good enough.
No.
Like, okay, how many power one?
Okay.
Richard, how many power toughness one creatures are you going to? So it's like you got to play Hate Bears and you can, like, recast your Thalias, but your 4 drop play is get through combat, deal 6, and then untap and then start playing one power creature. Like, that doesn't seem strong enough to me, but maybe you can get there somehow. But you have to be getting back, like, hate pieces with this power one or toughness one, right?
I actually think it could be a good card in the self-bounce decks because it, like, picks up Nurturing Pixie. It picks up Sunpetal Curin. It lets you recast them from the graveyard. So you just get this another looper, basically, where you can, like, Sunpetal Curin, pick up your removal spell, recast your removal spell. Then this picks up your Sunpetal Curin. Then you can recast it from the graveyard.
The flying lets you get in with the double strike.
The
right?
flying lets you get in yeah. with the double strike. So I Maybe. Think there could be decks. There could be decks, I think, where it could be a good standard card. What about Commander, Richard? When I think of you playing Commander, I think of white decks with one power and one toughness creatures, your Pilgrim Eyes and your Spirited Companions. Is this not a Richard staple in Commander?
I don't think so. Because the Commander itself is useless. It's a 3/3 double strike. And then because you put the finality counter on it, it ruins everything. Like your Sun Titan doesn't work, your Maria doesn't work, your Dusk Dawn doesn't work. And like if I was to do this, I would just play like Delny or something, you know, like just double my triggers on the way down and have a much more powerful commander. Because at the end of the day, if you're playing all these like power one toughness things, like having a 3/3 double striker is doing absolutely nothing for you. So I'd be interested in like some kind of instant speed Voltron deck. I don't know if you can like sneak this in and like equip all your crap onto it and just like one shot someone. There's probably got to be a way, but that would
there's
be the way.
Be something.
I built it. I actually thought about the set. You know what my conclusion was before I thought about power level? I'm like, I don't want to play Leonardo. And like, that was it. Like, I just don't. I'm like, oh, he's such a. I don't like him as a turtle. I don't like this art. I don't like anything about this. So I just don't want to play it.
Is that a new thing in Magic? Like, do you remember before the Universes Beyond era? Was there ever like a set that was printed and it had a card that was just like, if for whatever reason, it looked, you didn't like how it looked, you didn't like the character, so you refused to play it? Or is this something that's like new with Universes Beyond bringing different IPs in?
I think it's new. Like the opposite happened. So I would play stuff because of the character or because of the art or whatever. But I don't think I've ever been like, hey, I don't want to play this because I don't like this character or it doesn't jive with me or whatever. But that's because there was like no lore. Like I didn't like who is right, Delny yeah. really? Who am I to judge Delny before playing Delny, right? But I know who Leonardo is. Right? And it is a turtle and it's Universes Beyond. And I'm like, ah, like this is so like on the fence. But if it had Delny's ability, then I'd probably play Leonardo, right? But I'm
okay,
like,
if it was
its ability
enough,
is so like mediocre, it's like on the fence. I'm like, ah, it's not worth the trouble, right?
All right, you're not a Leonardo fan, but what about the other sneak card, Raphael's Technique? Is this card busted? So it's 6 mana instant. Each player may discard their hand and draw 7 cards, but you can sneak it for 3 mana. You might have to talk me down off this, because when I first read this, I was like, oh my god, is this not like a good mono red card in standard? Like, picture mono red, you're dumping your hand, you're attacking all the time, you're naturally going to break the symmetry, theoretically, because you empty your hand faster than your opponent, and then you just play this and refuel. Plus you have all that Crim card that he always plays, a Razorkin Needlehead that pings you if you draw a card to like discourage your opponent from choosing to actually draw 7, even if they had the opportunity to. Could this actually be like a real, like, refill my hand mono red card in standard?
Without Razorkin, I would say no. With Razorkin, it becomes very interesting. We have to be a burn heavy deck. Like, I think if you discard your, like, it's not really discard your hand, right? But like, pay 3 mana to draw a bunch of cards and they're all just like creatures, like, it kind of sucks. But if you have a bunch of 4 damage burn spells that you can untap and just burn your opponent, even though they've like taken down your board, then I think it works. I think with the Razorkin, this makes it like super more enticing, right? Because now your opponent is going to take 7 if they wheel and they don't want to do that. And then it's a one-sided wheel and then like you're cooking. It's also like a 6 mana do nothing or a 3 mana do nothing.
After Wrath, it's bad. Yeah.
Is a real problem because you're like, what if I don't have creatures to attack with, right?
And I think traditionally one of the biggest upsides of mono red is consistency, right? That's one of the reasons to play mono red. Your mana is perfect. You just curve out. All your cards kind of do the same thing, which is deal some amount of damage. And this is an inherently inconsistent card. It's ceiling super high where you like refill from having 0 cards in hand and it wins you the game. But then the floor is it's 6 mana. Someone wrath your board. You don't have a way to actually get into play. You got 3 lands and it's just like literally a dead card off the top of your deck. So
big
it'll
red.
Be interesting.
Big red. Like a slower control. Fully red deck where you can Razorkin wheel. You can also just instant speed wheel. It's
what
like
do you
not
think?
Bad.
Yeah, I mean, you can wheel on your opponent's end step, which is kind of cute. If you're going to sneak it, it's going to have to be main phase, because, or not main phase, but during your turn because you need to unblock creature. But still, 6-mana wheel on the end step, untap, get the cards first. Kind of powerful. What about Commander? I've seen a lot of people be salty about this card in Commander because everyone's like, I don't know if you remember, like a few years ago, we talked about fixing Notion Thief effect, or not Notion, yeah, Notion Thief effects and like Narset effects. And we were like, well, you should make those so it only triggers if your opponent made you draw the card. So essentially a way that you could not combo Notion Thief with a wheel. It seems like Wizards tried to solve the same problem, but the way they did it is by making all wheels optional. So you can just choose to opt out of the wheel, so you can't force your opponent to like discard and then draw with a Notion Thief out or whatever. Do you think that makes the card bad? Is this a good Commander card, even knowing that your opponent can just choose to opt out if wheeling is negative for them?
Are you playing Nekusar?
Yeah,
if you're gonna do one of these wheel combos, this card's crazy. But I think a wheel in the abstract sucks. I know, yeah. Back in the day, we were all over wheels.
Yeah, I used to love wheels.
We kind of sucked at Magic back then, right? And then also your options for card advantage were not as good, so we would just wheel. But the table is drawing 21 fresh cards versus your 7, right? And that's probably very bad for you unless you have the combo out, which is like a Nekusar or something. Then this becomes insane, obviously, right? But as a way to just draw cards, I would never play a card like this, especially that requires you to sneak, because you need to be able to attack and unblocked, right? And it may be rough, right? You may not get it, and then this card is like 6-mana wheel is like so bad. I wouldn't go there.
So the other card I want to ask you about before we move on to some other topics, what do you think of Super Shredder, Richard? Is this like from the 60 card perspective, what does Super Shredder do, and do you think it's good?
So 1 and a black, 1/1 legendary creature, mutant ninja human, menace. Whenever another permanent leaves the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on Super Shredder. Is this Tarmogoyf set?
Everything grows the Super Shredder, yeah?
Everything.
So that dies.
Your stuff, their stuff, and it simply leaves the battlefield. So bounce, blink,
yep.
Dies. Even if you have like Rest in Peace up or whatever, the thing gets exiled. Most notably, like just chucking fetch lands grows this thing, right? It has menace, but the bane of all cards of 2025, Seth, legendary. You can only have one Super Shredder. You better hope it gets the job done, because you can't stack them up. But this thing's going to get huge, right? This is effectively a 2-mana, like 3/3, 4/4, depending how old you get, right? In the older formats, this thing is probably going to be huge, right? Because you fetch, your opponent fetches. It's already a 3/3 menace, right? You remove something, you bounce something, you use a treasure. Like treasures, tokens, all that stuff counts because they're permanents.
It's just leave the battlefield, yeah.
It's insane, yeah, right?
I feel like this card's actually kind of insane. Yeah, and it does synergize even more the further back you go, like you said, with fetch lands and Mishra's Baubles and all that stuff. But the fact it's anyone's permanent, and it's any permanent, we've just never seen a card like this before. We've seen two drops that are like, well, when a creature dies, it gets a +1/+1 counter, things like that. But we've never seen a card that's just like, when anything leaves the battlefield for any reason, get a counter on it. I think the card has a shot. I think the card has a shot to be good. Obviously, like you said, legendary is a big drawback on a card like this. You need it to grow and you need to stick out, and you can't really do anything with multiples. But I still think in some number, this has a chance to be a really good, like, constructed card somewhere, like in standard or maybe even back in like modern and older formats.
I will try modern again, Seth.
Ooh, Super Shredder got you back?
This is better than, like, okay, if this was not legendary, this is 1000% better than Tarmogoyf, I believe.
Yeah. Right? I would agree.
Because,
with that.
Like, if you just like stack two fetch lands, it's a 3/3, right? Without doing anything else, right? And if you could stack them up so, like, when they kill one, the other one grows, it'd be amazing. But the fact that it's legendary is a big problem, because one Tarmogoyf is not enough to get it done, Seth. You need to stack them all down.
You gotta stack them up.
So I don't know. It's interesting. I'll try. And then, of course, there's all these like cheesy synergies you can do. You can put in the Baubles. You can, you know, make blood tokens or something. I don't know, right? Like, there's all these things you can just sacrifice to grow this. But wait, Seth, I want a ninja in. I want a ninja in a card here.
Ninja something in.
Bebop and Rocksteady.
Ooh.
One Golgari. So 3-mana. Legendary creature, boar, rhino, mutant. 7/5. Whenever Bebop and Rocksteady attack or block, sacrifice a permanent unless you discard a card. This is standard playable, right?
This is, this is
Rotting Regisaur, like, without getting blown out because they waited for your turn to discard a card and fire it off the spot.
Kill it.
I guess the same thing can be done anyway, right? Because you go to combat, you attack, and then they kill it. So
it's Rotting Regisaur. It's essentially Rotting Regisaur. Again, the downside of being legendary, which I guess we can just assume that of all these creatures.
Regisaur wasn't legendary, right?
Regisaur was not legendary, no. So you could stack up Regisaurs. But essentially Rotting Regisaur, I actually think this is a really good standard card. And the reason is we have a lot of mechanics that actually turn discarding into an upside. We have like Monument to Endurance. The first thing I thought of, and I don't know how the flavor works on this, and it's, I'm not a big flavor guy. I've talked about that before where I'm like, I could play with a deck of cards and I don't care. But I think the best synergy is Carnage, Crimson Chaos from the Spider-Man set. Got this like Ninja Turtles and Spider-Man deck going on. I don't know what the flavor is, but Carnage is so perfect for this because you can maim it in for two, so it likes to be discarded. And then it reanimates something. Mana value 3 or less, so then you can get this back. So I think this is a good standard card in Mayhem decks, in self-discard decks, and maybe in some number in just like Regisaur. Maybe you can just play it for value because people played Regisaur and just like mono black and just like, I'm going to attack with this big 7-power 3 drop.
Yeah, this like people played Regisaur like as a fair card, right? And you're just like 3 mana, 7/5. Untap, remove your thing, smack you for 7. You got 2 more turns, right? Smack you for 7, smack you for 7. So it's I like it, actually. I don't know if I like this Carnage Bebop Rocksteady deck, but it sounds very good.
that's magic in 2026,
Wait,
Richard.
What's Carnage's Omen Path name sets?
Oh,
does
no.
it make it any better?
Deserex, I believe, something like that. Okay, I'm going to ninja in one more card because I just got to ask you about, I got to ask you about this commander card. Heroes in a Half Shell. We mentioned the name earlier. It's a 5-color commander that cares about turtles. 5 mana, 5/5, Wooburg, Vigilance, Menace, Trample, and Haste. When one or more mutants, ninjas, or turtles you control deal combat damage to a player, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature and draw a card. What do you think of... The first thing I thought of with this is it's kind of like every single set we get the same card. Like every Universes Beyond, there's some like, here's a 5-color commander where if you did, like, look at Cosmic Spider-Man. Here's a 5-color commander. If you just want to take all the things from the set and put them in the same deck, here you go. It's like baby's first Ninja Turtle commander, baby's first Spider-Man 5-color commander. Does this seem a little cookie cutter to you? It just seems like kind of bland. I already think 5-color commanders in universe tend to be bland. And then this just makes them feel even more cookie cutter and bland to me. Remember Obnixilus Planeswalker era where every Planeswalker, we were like, they're just kind of following a formula. +1 draw a card, negative removal, ultimate win the game. Is that the same thing with these 5-color commanders that we're getting every set now?
Yeah. I mean, I know it's cool to say Universes Beyond is slop and all, but like, design wise in Commander, we've been on slop for a while, right? Like every commander is like so like dead obvious, like what you're supposed to do with it. And it's like the payoff and the what do you call it? It's like the whole card is a combo in itself. Like it itself draws off itself, right? Because it's a mutant ninja and a turtle. It pumps your team. It's a 5 mana, 5/5 with 8 million keywords. Like it's boring, but I guess like if you're a new player, this is what you kind of need, right? You're just like, I'm just gonna slap my turtles in a deck, and then it's gonna do the thing because it's super effective. But like every commander is like some kind of Toski effect that grows your team and like doesn't really need anything, right? And we have all of them for all the creature types now, so just expect it, right? Like I'm sure we're gonna get Star Trek thing that looks like this, right?
Five color Spock, put in all your Star Treks.
So I don't know. I mean,
I guess it just is what it is.
I don't know. It's just it's not fun to play because it's like you just slam random cards and then do the thing and then it like works, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's very true. I think if there's one takeaway from the Spider-Man set for me, it is the set that I have most seen or realized, and I guess it's been going on for a while, but just like a big focus on new players. I don't know. I don't even think that's necessarily a bad thing, but just like with ninjutsu becoming sneak and a little bit simpler, and then the like kind of cookie cutter five color commanders, you can definitely see that part of the design goal, I would say, of I guess every set, but especially Universes Beyond set, which Wizards have talked about as their best way to get new players into the game, really kind of intentionally being designed with that in mind, which in some ways is probably a good thing, but it's becoming more and more noticeable to me, just kind of the focus on kind of simplification compared to what we've seen in the past. But any other Spider-Man thoughts before we hit up some other topics?
Not Spider-Man sets.
Oh my god, they're all blending together. Yeah, I know. Oh my god. Well, speaking of Spider-Man, I got some pricing news for you, Richard. I don't know if you noticed this. Spider-Man collector boosters, $465. MSRP, $455. They are essentially down to MSRP after shooting up to almost $1,000. And the other news of the week is Avatar, which nothing has changed. We haven't got any new spoilers or anything. Avatar has dropped from up at $1,100 in mid-August to $600 today. Which, why do you think this is happening? Is this just like all these speculators and scalpers were like, oh my god, Final Fantasy, all these sets, these future Universes Beyond sets are going to be the same way and we're going to make so much money. And now Spider-Man kind of flopped financially, at least as far as like selling for way above MSRP. And now they're like, maybe this isn't as guaranteed of a way to make money as I thought it would. What do you make of these huge price drops on collector boosters?
It's great. They're still too expensive, right? Like you know, if you go back to the olden days, we're like $100 a booster, right? Like maybe $200 for some shinies. But I think people are scared. People always blame scalpers, but I don't think they understand that like they themselves are the scalpers, right? Like, I'll give you an example because this happens in One Piece all the time. People complain about scalpers, and I'm like, but like we're all scalpers, right? Because one Final Fantasy is so difficult to attain. Right? And collector boosters are $100. If you just go to Walmart to buy some groceries and you see some random Final Fantasy packs there for $30 and you had no intention of buying any magic cards today, your deck is done, you don't need anything, but you see a $30 pack when it's normally $100, you just buy it. And chances are you buy all of them up to your conscience level, right? Some people see like five, they'll buy five. Some people be like, oh, I'll just take one and save four for others. Other people be like, yo, let's call all our friends. They're all gonna come in and buy them, right? But it's effectively the same thing, right? Like you're the same as the scalper, even though you mean well, but you're just buying things because it's like cheap. You're making money, even though you're not actually selling them, right? Like you're getting it at a discount. Yeah. And when you see Spider-Man tanking, you're not going to do this anymore, right? And then scalpers, obviously, who are trying to turn a profit are not going to do this anymore. So the price keeps getting pushed down. I think at some point, someone's going to scoop them all up. And I think that's probably, not MTG finance advice, but in the future, you're going to look back and you're like, wow, you know, like you could have got Spider-Man like pretty cheap at some point because there is this the Soul Stone or whatever in there, right? There are the Spider-Man chase cards. But I do think everyone is spooked, right? It's no longer, if I find this product at MSRP or cheaper than, you know, like just around MSRP, I will just buy it because I'm getting so much value, right? Like, you know, like I could open Surge Foil Sephiroth or whatever, right? But I like, so I don't know. The surprising thing is Avatar, right? Because everyone's like, well, you know, Turtles, you know, Spider-Man. But everyone's like, oh, Avatar, the greatest thing I've ever seen. You know, like, oh, weebs, anime, whatever. And that has taken collateral damage, right? That is like kind of basically half of its peak, right? From 1,100,
yeah, very close,
down to 600. So that is the more interesting one there where people, at least in the online communities, kind of like universally loved Avatar. And then that thing tanked. So that's something to look out for.
I think you nailed it, but I think overall, like, it feels like good news. It feels like some amount of sanity being restored to the market after, like, all the hype and, like, the bubbliness of Final Fantasy. And I think it's just, like, objectively true that value-wise, Spider-Man shouldn't have been selling for $1,000 a box. It's very likely that Avatar probably shouldn't be selling for $1,100 a box. And I think we forget that, like, $500 a box, $450 a box, $600 a box, that is still an absurd amount of money for a collector booster box. Like, it was only a couple years ago that I was like, $300 for a collector booster box? That's insane. Why would I ever pay that amount of money? And now these are like double that price, and they somehow feel cheap compared to where they were a couple months ago. So I think it's a good thing that prices are normalizing, and hopefully that actually sticks and makes things a little bit more accessible for people. Anyway, let's move on. Let's move on to some other news. This weekend was Eternal Weekend, and I got to bring up this deck because this deck is sweet. I watched a little bit of it, not as much as I wanted to because I had other stuff I had to do this weekend. But during the Legacy part of Eternal Weekend, a player named Jacob Murray came in with his brew and made it all the way to the semifinals, one match away from the finals. I don't know if you saw any of this, Richard. The deck was Legacy Smallpox, and it's built around an Edge of Eternity's Commander card that I didn't even know existed, a Mundian Hatchery. It's a land that taps to make a black mana, and you pay a life, and you put a hatching counter on it. And then when the land goes to the graveyard from the battlefield, you get a 1/1 black insect creature token for each of the hatching counters. So this was a, like, Loam Smallpox deck where you're trying to, like, power up this land with a bunch of counters, and then you could, like, wasteland yourself or smallpox it and get a bunch of insects and use those to win the game. You also got, like, Barrowgoyf in there, Hogak in there. The deck looks super cool. So, I don't know, the deck just had me hyped to see someone actually, like, having a lot of success in a big tournament with what seems like a pretty sweet brew. But what do you think of the smallpox deck?
What? The hatchery is enough to finish the game? What?
The hatchery? I mean, you got a couple Hogex in there, I guess. A couple,
like, you just
masters,
make, like,
but...
2/1 insects, and then you, like, small, you know, you smallpox them, you sack this thing. You make 2/1s, and you're like, that's enough to end the game? Like, what? I'm so confused, Seth.
I mean, you got wastelands, you got life from the loam. So that combined with, like, taxing your opponent's mana, hopefully, would be enough to end the game. Like, hopefully your opponent's not doing much because you're wasteland locking them or whatever.
Is this a fair Hogak deck? Like, I see Hogax in here. Like, what's up with that?
It looks like a super fair Hogax. Like, I guess it's just for, like, value, kind of. The Hogax didn't even really make that much sense to me. I was like, I'm not even sure what those are doing in there. But yeah, I mean, it worked. Wrote it all the way to the semifinals.
I'm sure everyone was super confused on how to sideboard against this deck. They're like, what? Like, what?
Yeah, no one had any idea what was going on. But it's nice to see that brewing can still have some success in Magic, even in formats like Legacy, which was pretty impressive. So shout out to the smallpox deck. Well, Richard, so we got a fish mail, and this fish mail leads into something I wanted to talk about. This came from Talarian Ninja over on Blue Sky. Said, is Standard too big to balance now? Before last rotation, there were almost as many base cards legal in Standard, just over 4,000, as in Vintage back in 2000. And that was mostly before the six sets a year cadence. Before rotation, there were 1,857. Rotation 2020, there were 1,857. So is Standard too big to balance? And this got me thinking. So I did a little research, and this stat blew my mind. When Modern launched, Richard, in 2011, you had sets from 2003 to 2011, there were 5,304 cards that were legal in the format. Right now, Standard has 3,438 cards, and we're getting 8 more sets before we have rotation in January 2027. So by the time we get to the end of last year, 2026 Standard will have more legal cards than 2011 Modern. When Modern launched, is this explaining a lot of, like, why Standard is so busted and so powerful? Has it just gotten too big to actually be realistically managed?
Nah. Right? I mean, like, okay. If every set, like, some Amulet Titan Master Brew comes out, you know, if, like, someone, like, pulls out a Lantern Control, you're like, okay. You know, like, who would have foreseen this, like, pile of jag crap, like, you know, becoming tier zero? But it's like VV Cauldron. Yes, that took, like, so much foresight to figure out that this was the thing, right? Like,
yeah.
Corey Steelcutter plus Ops. Like, you know, like, I don't think it was, like, the overabundance of cards, right? It's, like, the most obvious-looking synergies are broken. And that just shows, like, no balance as opposed to they tried hard. And, like, here's some weird Amulet Titan deck that someone came up with, right? Like, the Emery Hatchery thing you just talked about, right? If those were the decks that were breaking Standard, I would give the balance team some kind of slack. But this is just, like, they do no testing. So it doesn't matter what the size of the pool is, right? Like, It's literally so, like old modern. Like, we actually didn't test anything. We just made this random format, and then we're going to balance it as we go, right? Like, it's kind of like that old design where they never tested for modern or vintage or legacy. You know, they just had one person somewhere do a once over, like, I guess it looks fine, right? And they're like, our focus is standard, right? So it's like, whatever, right? But that's how they approach standard now. So no, I'm not giving them that out, Seth. You can see VV Cauldron from a mile away, okay?
Yeah. Okay, I agree. I agree that it wouldn't explain like the outlier cards. It's not gonna explain VV Cauldron. It's not gonna explain Corey Steelcutter. Those were design mistakes, those are lacks of testing, blah, 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 blah. I will say, I do think it does account a little bit for just like the general power level of the format. We've had a lot of conversations about Standard's a turn four format now, when a decade ago, Modern wasn't supposed to be a turn four format. There was just a video by, I think it was Doomwake this past week, talking about like how so many different decks in Standard can kill you on turn four, which is just something that's not normal. Before the last round of bannings, we talked about Standard being a turn three format, where there are multiple decks that were trying to kill you literally on turn three in Standard. So I think the larger card pool does explain some of that. Just like having more cards is going to lead to faster games, more synergies. Like, so I think it does explain some of that for me, but I also agree that it's, I mean, VV is a mistake regardless of whether you have 200 or 20,000 cards in the format. Like, it's just a design mistake.
Also, they're half commander cards, so I don't know what we want to do with that. Like, yes, the pool is large, but a lot of them are clearly not for 60 cards.
Yeah, like, but a big chunk are for draft, a lot are for commander, and then you have a handful that are actually for standard. Yeah.
Yeah. But even draft is balanced around 1v1, right? So
that's true.
And they're balanced around their rarity. But yeah, I mean, the point still stands. Like, standard today is larger or will be larger than what modern started with. Yeah. And I think, like, that's theoretically a good thing. Right? Like, as the game gets more popular, people should have more choices to build their decks. The problem is, like, it doesn't actually matter how big standard is, because only the top, like, 0.01% of cards see play. Right? Like, it's the top 100 cards or whatever that see play everywhere, and then the rest, like, kind of do nothing. So I would rather that spread be much more evenly distributed. And then, you know, if you want to play your Turtles deck, play your Turtles deck. It's, like, legit, right? And you can play your Spider-Man deck, and you can play your Avatar deck. But currently, you can't do any of that, right? You're just going to play, like, the one broken meta deck. And then, like,
VV Cauldron. Let's do it. VV Cauldron mirrors all day.
And whatever. Yeah, oh, that's coming up, right? We got, like, 3 weeks left of that. That's expiring soon.
Yeah, under a month now until we get bannings. I've been counting. I think it's 27 days as of today. We're getting there. I'm going to make. Did you ever make like those chains when you were a kid to like count down the days till Christmas or your birthday? You remember that? I'm going to make one of those and hang in the back
of
my office
to
count down until bannings.
Advent
calendar. Yeah. Yes.
Every day you open it, there's a new standard card that's being pushed out by VV Cauldron. And after 28 days, they assemble into a deck.
But it's the other shocking part of that stats is. We had in Modern 8 years of sets, and by the end of next year, when we have all those sets, it was 3.5 years. So I think it also just shows how many more cards we're getting each year. Like, not only is it more sets, but, like, there's more legal cards in those sets. We're getting cards, like, twice the rate we were back in the, like, early 2000s, which is kind of crazy. Anyway, I wanted to bring up something else before we get to the end of this cast, which is Mark Rosewater's blog. I know you check the Magic Reddits like I do, Richard, and you probably noticed that there are a lot of posts. There always have been, but I think there's been even more lately, which is essentially Mark Rosewater said something on his blog about whatever. Sometimes it's Universes Beyond, sometimes it's design, sometimes it's just some random thing. And I've been wondering, like, how should we as a community take those posts? Like, how do you look at these posts? When you hear Mark Rosewater say something on his blog, do you take that like, this is Wizards' official company line that, like, you know, is being sent out to the community? Or is this, you know, just some random guy kind of talking off the cuff on his blog? And you should be like, okay, that was cool and entertaining, and maybe I got some tidbits, but I don't take it too seriously. Like, how much weight should we put into that?
Zero weight? I don't know. So, I mean, like, Mark Rosewater clearly works for Wizards of the Coast. Yeah. I don't, so some people are like, oh, he's intentionally deceiving us or whatever. Like, I don't think that's happening. I think he is trying to give you an honest look into the process, right? And he doesn't know everything, so he's just telling you from his perspective. But obviously, he also works for Wizards of the Coast. He's not going to, you know, say, like, super negative things or, you know, leak, whatever. It's called being a professional, right? If he wants to work at Wizards of the Coast, he can't just be like, yeah, well, yesterday we had a meeting with five idiots and they like vetoed my idea. You know, like, he's not going to say stuff like that. But I do think most people misinterpret what he says, or like, I don't know, they like go back and they're like, yes, in 1997, I found this quote from Mark Rosewater, and it's like the opposite of what he said yesterday, right? Like, clearly he's a hypocrite. You know, I'm like, what? Right? Like, they're digging up like old stuff. They're digging like out of context stuff, right? It's like, I believe that whatever he tells us at the current time is roughly correct, right? And, you know, that doesn't mean it's the complete truth. It doesn't mean, you know, anything. It just means like roughly that's an inside look. But again, that like kind of means nothing. Like, what really matters is like what ends up happening. Right? Like, if he says he hates Universes Beyond, like, it means absolutely nothing to us. Like, are they still going to make Universes Beyond or no? Right? If he says, oh, I hear you guys, you know, we're taking all the feedback. Does that mean anything? I don't know. Like, are they going to take the feedback and do anything with it? Right? Like, so it kind of just, it's just noise. It's like, I don't know. It's like NFL preseason talk, right? It's like something to talk about and there's stuff to ponder about. But at the end of the day, it kind of means basically nothing. But some people take it as like sacrilegious, right? I'm like, I don't know why, but
that's kind of where I'm at with it too. I feel like a lot of people take it way too seriously for what it is. Like, there, I also believe, I don't think Mark goes out there and like tries to lie to anyone. I think there are things he legitimately can't say. And like you said, he works for Wizards, so there's things he's not going to be able to say because he wants to keep his job. But I don't think he goes out there and lies about stuff. And I feel like it's a good thing for the community overall that Mark is so open about stuff. I think it's almost kind of unique. I guess I'm not super into a lot of other games, but I imagine from what I've heard from people, usually you don't have this amount of openness from someone that's like the head designer of the game that is just daily answering so many questions. So I think it's really a positive thing that we have this like give and take, but I think people also read way too much into it and take it way more seriously than they should when this is just Mark Rosewater. I think of this like my Twitter, where like sometimes I tweet something and it becomes like this big deal that everyone's talking about. And I know why I tweeted it. And I know that I just like woke up and had a cup of coffee and the thought popped into my head and I typed it out in 30 seconds and went on to make my next video. And then I look at it an hour later, I'm like, oh my God, why are so many people talking about this? It was just like a random thought. And I think that's like how I view Mark Rosewater's blog too. Like, it's nice for entertainment purposes. I like that we get some little nuggets, but I think that people need to maybe take it a little bit less seriously. And I've seen with the Universes Beyond stuff, it getting like almost kind of harsh to the point where I'm like, I'm kind of surprised Mark keeps answering all these questions. But there was one this week that was just like, why are you destroying MTG? Question mark. That was the whole question was just, why are you destroying MTG? So I feel like it gets a little bit too extreme there. But,
you know, after we said all that, I will say some of the language he's used recently is kind of interesting, even though I just said you guys take this too seriously. He has, like, on the record, said he doesn't like Commander, right? We all know this. Like, if he says he doesn't like Commander, right? But he says he just makes, you know, what people want, right? So, like, I don't know why people think he's lying and stuff. He just literally just straight up says he doesn't like Commander, like, all the time. But he's, like, saying, like, weird things like, oh, the game is, like, growing to meet the needs of its player base. And it's, like, what you guys actually want. You know, and like, I don't know, that sounds like gaslighting, right? But like, there's some truth to it, but like, just the way it's being said is like so weird, right? It's like, oh, as the game adapts, you need to adapt or move on. You know, it's like, well, this is some weird language. And I think he's had enough of trying to like, you know, satiate the internet mob, right? Because like, it's just some weird things to be saying. But the message has always been like, we made more money. That means people like it, right? Yeah. And then I think actually the important thing he actually says that you should actually put some stock into is everyone's like saying things like, oh, it's only scalpers playing the game, or only like new players are playing Universes Beyond, stuff like that. And he like straight up says, like, the data shows that it's old time Magic players playing Universes Beyond. Right. And that people are buying the cards and playing with them, and they're not just buying them and like stop, you know, storing them away. He explicitly says that. And I believe him when he says that, because like Wizards actually does care about that. Right. That does help grow their money bags. Essentially, if you give them money, they think it's a success and they will keep doing it. And then they will change when things are not a success. But it takes time. right? Spider-Man is the aftermath, of Assassin's Creed and Aftermath, right? Like, it's still going. They're still fixing that thing they learned a couple years ago. It just takes them a while to fix. So whatever you think they learned from Spider-Man, you're not going to see it for another 2 years, right? And, you know, people will complain for the time being, right? So, yeah.
People forget how big of a ship it is to actually turn Magic and just how far ahead that they are working on a lot of these sets. And now we have contracts with other companies on top of that for crossovers. So yeah, it just takes a while to actually turn the ship in this case. The other thing I'd say about Mero's blog is it's also just like a wealth of knowledge when it comes to just game design stuff. Like the stuff that's like the future of Magic or whatever the current controversy is, I kind of take a lot of that as like it's Mark's opinion and as much as he can actually say given his position and NDAs and all that stuff. But when it comes to just like game design stuff, I think that like that's where I really value what Mark has to say, because I really, really have a huge amount of respect for Mark as a person and a game designer. And that's the stuff that I find super interesting, is just his random like game design type stuff and history stuff that you wouldn't get anywhere else. And I have a little fear that like if we're too mean to Mark, he's just going to eventually shut down his blog, or maybe he's so much of a glutton for punishment, he's just going to keep doing it. But I think it would be a sad day for Magic if we actually are so over the top to Mero on his blog that eventually he says, it's just not worth doing and I'm just going to shut it down. I think we'd be worse off for that if it got to that point.
It's simply not worth it. Like, if I was Hasbro, I would have shut down Mark's blog for so, like, it's not even, it's like, Mark is pretty high up in Magic. Like, his thinking time is very valuable, and it's not worth wasting on us plebs, essentially. You know what I mean? Like, we're making him, like, answer like random questions when he needs to be thinking about like the bigger problems in Magic the Gathering. So from like a cost perspective, it's simply just not worth his time, you know, like for Hasbro to pay him his salary to talk to us, and it should go to a community manager, right? But yeah, because there's this historic trend where he's done it forever and like he's, you know, it's part of his routine and whatever, like he kind of just keeps going. But I would imagine the person that replaces Mark in the future does not do this. Right? Can you imagine, like, you know, like the CEO of some company just like engaging like every day, like for like 5 hours with people? Like, it sounds great in theory, but then they're not doing their CEO work or whatever, right? Like, they got to actually do their real work too, right?
So, have you seen how many tweets Elon Musk puts up each day, Richard? And he runs actually a pretty big company, so
this is true. This is all true, actually, right? Maybe they don't actually do any work whatsoever, maybe it's not actually, it's not, you know, Mark Rosewater, it's Robo Rosewater or something in the background. Yeah. Just like,
it's just
writing
AI,
all these
AI
comments.
Mark,
yeah, it's just AI,
it
right? Because the man needs to do work.
Yeah.
How can you work after you mental boom reading these comments every day, Seth?
And exactly. And like, I think it's also probably, in some sense, it's a positive for Hasbro and Wizards, because you have Mark out there that's like sometimes defending things that they do, even if they're unpopular. But I would say overall, there's a lot of downside there, too, because the other thing that happens is what you said earlier, where it's like, oh, Mark Rosewater said back in 2013 that we would never have other IPs in Magic, and we got you now, and look how you're all liars and things like that. And people like will latch onto those things, and those become like the big topics, the top post on Reddit, the big things. And I think that's kind of unavoidable. Like, if you just are answering 20 questions, 30 questions a day in long form on your blog, you're going to have things over the years that end up being different or end up being wrong. And people are going to pick those things out and just hammer you for it. So I think that's the other downside, is it's just, the internet's not very forgiving with stuff like that. And you say one thing 10 years ago and boy, you're going to own it forever, whether you want to or not. Anyway. I think those are all of our big topics for today, but I did have one more fish mail I wanted to sneak in. So this fish mail, let me see, where'd it come from? At Real Tap Water says, I don't like how Spider-Man was sandaled. I don't like the look of it. And I think the Omen Path cards are cooler, even though the names were kind of rough. I've been playing a ton of Omen Path drafts. I don't want Wizards to get the message that the set is awesome. What should I do? So basically, I don't like Spider-Man. I don't want to support Spider-Man, but I kind of like Omen Pass, and I want to support Omen Pass. How do I vote with my wallet on this one, Richard?
Buy the Omen Paths cosmetics. So, like, I think that's the only way to think about it, right? So the Fleam should come for free, but they have, like, the extended borders and whatever, you know, like the Parallax styles or whatever. And I was thinking to myself, like, who would buy these, right? Because I already think they're kind of sus. But I think that's the only way to do it. I think drafting a ton helps. But I don't know, right? Because it's a weird thing. Like, we talked about this before. Like, Omen Path is kind of part of the Spider-Man package. So when you support Omen Pass, you're kind of supporting Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know how you do it. I actually think the real way is to just not play it at all, right? We've seen 17 Lands data that in franchise, 17 Lands players are not playing Omen Pass, like, pick two draft, like, at all. Like, at all.
It's real bad.
And it looks real bad. And the only question is, like, how many constructed players or players who don't normally play pick two or play draft start playing pick two, right? And if that number is not, like, gigantic, then it's a huge net negative for Wizards. And Wizards will see that and they'll do something about it, right? So I really do think the answer is just do not play Omen Paths at all if you... you know, don't like the Spider-Man situation. And then also don't play Spider-Man drafts in real life, right? Because the other thing is if Spider-Man drafts in real life are firing like crazy, but Omen Paths is not, then that shows Wizards it's the Omen Path IP. Or
right.
Yeah. You know, it's like this split IP thing. But if both don't fire, then that tells them. So basically just do something else, right? And come back later.
I mean, I think that's all you can do. And I will say it gets even tougher once you get to constructed. If you feel like you're voting with my wallet, what do you not put a card from Spider-Man in your standard deck, even if it's like the right way to win as much as possible because you don't want to play with Spider-Man cards? These are just choices that people have never had to deal with before. It's like an entirely new thing. So I think that's like it's going to be interesting to see how people handle it. But I think overall, you're right. It all comes down to money. If you're giving Wizards money for a product, that's going to be taken as a vote for that product. So if you really are hard against something, the only real option is not to spend money on that something and spend it on something else instead or save it for the next set. So anyway, thank you. Thank you for sending in the questions. Richard, how do people send in future Fishmail questions?
All right. Hit us up at MTGGoldfish with the hashtag MTGFishmail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And I believe that brings us to the end of episode 557 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So, Richard, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about whatever goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have a lovely week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.